in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, writer Jay Faerber is back to discuss his unique spin on superhero storytelling. Just like his Image Comics contemporary Robert Kirkman, Jay knows how to put a new spin on superhero books, whether it's Dynamo 5, the book of five heroes who were the illegitimate offspring of an iconic but flawed super dad, Noble Causes, the soap opera family story, whose twisted backstory is jumping ahead 5 years into the future for new spins on the family's relationships, and his new book, Gemini, which we'll go into detail as our conversation begins. Let's start with Gemini. First, when does the first issue come out?
Gemini comes out in May. Gosh, I don't know which week it's scheduled for yet.
Okay.
But it is out in May. The first issue is totally done. Second issue is in progress. So we're ahead of the game. It's a five-issue miniseries, superhero genre, set in my same little corner of the Image universe with Noble Causes and Dynamo 5.
Very cool. And I can't, and definitely we'll be talking about all three. I always appreciate your Faerber verse because I do think it's interesting, and I think you always turn the camera a different way. The focus isn't your traditional superhero stories. You've always got a different bent on each of these books. And how would you describe Gemini? And you know what it reminds me of, Jay. And I know you're a fan of old TV.
Mm-hmm.
God, was the show called Search with Doug McClure and Tony Franciosa or something? It was basically a group.
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it. So.
Okay, because this is kind of what it reminded me of in terms of it being this kind of secret organization that was following. They would have an agent in the field.
Okay,
and this is pre-internet and everything. And I mean, today's technology is nothing, but essentially had like satellite cameras and microphones on the agent's person, and they would literally be able to guide the guy every step of the way, which back in the early 70s was just like crazy technology.
Yeah, flying cars. Yeah,
but, yeah exactly. And it was kind of this mission control that would be, guiding the agent along his various missions and everything. And they had three different agents that they would follow in the field. And that's what Gemini kind of reminded me of. So now you tell, based on that, you tell me what, and tell everyone else what the pitch is.
That's all just coincidence, I think. I mean, really my kind of one-sentence pitch for it to Image was that it's the Manchurian candidate, but he's a superhero. It's this guy who, as far as he's concerned, just some normal guy, and the phone will ring, and, the person on the other end will utter some code word that basically activates him into being a superhero. And he has when he's done being a superhero, he has no memory of it, and it works both ways. When he's a superhero, he has no idea that he's anything but a superhero. It never occurs to him that he has a civilian identity, or he doesn't even know what he looks like under his mask. It's due to, kind of post-hypnotic suggestions and stuff. He just thinks he's a superhero all the time.
Okay.
And it cuts back and forth, as you saw, between Gemini and these three handlers he has that monitor his every move and activate him and deactivate him and, decide what missions are appropriate to send him on, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So the miniseries is basically his kind of self-discovery. It's him learning who he is and why he is and who these people are and all that kind of stuff.
And what can you tell us about each of the handlers?
There's a female, 91, I believe. They're all designated by numbers.
Uh-huh.
They don't. Their real names. They can't discuss their real names. They have to have deniability, and in case one of them is captured by an enemy. So they're just given numbers. The girl is the newest handler. She's the one who actually speaks to Gemini through his earpiece and on the phone. And it's her first day in the job, so that's kind of our shortcut to getting some exposition out.
Okay.
And then there are two guys, kind of an older, bigger guy who is the most experienced one, and he seems to handle all the tough decisions, and he's the boss out of these three, at least. And then there's a younger guy who kind of gets the grunt work, the research for the behind-the-scenes stuff, and he wants to be in the field. He wants to be Gemini, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of, disappointed that he's stuck on the sidelines. So So it's, you know, but they're all good guys. They all get along together and stuff. And in time, we'll see more of their organization and how it works and possibly some other agents they have in the field, that sort of thing.
Okay. Have we seen this organization in the other books yet, or is this their first appearance?
No, this is all new. Gemini has a little cameo, just like a one-panel cameo, in the Dynamo 5 annual, which will be out probably early April. We're running a little bit late on it, but so he's got just a tiny cameo there. But for the most part, Gemini, you know, it takes place in my little universe, but it's self-contained. It all starts there.
That's cool. And will we see them? Will we see the organization possibly in future stories in either Noble Causes or Dynamo 5?
That I don't know yet.
Okay.
Haven't gotten that far yet. It's possible, but we'll have to see just how Gemini wraps up yet.
That's cool.
I know that we will see issue 4 of Gemini. We'll have a big Dynamo 5 guest appearance.
Very cool.
Gemini takes a road trip to Tower City where he mixes it up with Dynamo 5, so that should be fun.
That's cool. And you were kind enough to give me a couple previews of what's coming up in Noble Causes. I was happy to see in a flashback Captain Dynamo. In a story, and I thought that was fun to see.
We're going to be, especially with those two, since they're monthlies and everything. Gemini has to be, because it's a miniseries, I have to keep it a little bit separate from the other two.
Sure.
But we're going to try to cross pollinate Dynamo 5 and Noble Causes a little bit more. Obviously, I want them each to stand alone, but you know, just a little back and forth between them, so that. You see some of the history they share and some of the crossover elements. Should be pretty cool.
How's your audience reacting to the other books? Have you found a lot of the Noble Causes people follow you to Dynamo 5 so far?
Dynamo 5 is the bestseller, obviously. It outsells Noble Causes, so I'm trying to do the reverse and getting Dynamo 5 people to check out Noble Causes.
Okay.
And that's kind of why we've done this 5-year jump in Noble Causes, where the next issue takes place 5 years after the previous one,
mm-hmm.
which was out more than a couple months ago. Just as kind of a fresh slate to kind of clear the decks and give everybody a level playing field, so that the people who've been reading Noble Causes from day one will be equally confused as the people who just pick up the book for the first time, because it's all new characters, new situations. New family members, the whole thing.
Yeah, new relationships. I mean, it was fun to see, and I appreciated the preview because I felt as an old Noble Causes reader as well, as confused as I was, it was great to see everybody and all the different role reversals in terms of relationships. A lot of, adversarial relationships seem to have mended the fences in the 5 years.
And I should point out that I hope it's a good confuse. That's
absolutely
what I'm going for with people. I'm not sitting out to frustrate the readers, but it should be an intriguing setup for the characters. And that's part of the fun, is seeing how these characters who used to be kind of enemies are now friends. And, you know, we'll see that there is, as the book goes on, I'm, you know, 32 is the first, quote-unquote, new issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm writing 36 as we speak. And
okay.
You know, there is some conflict brewing between some of the characters that wasn't there before, and it comes from different places and stuff. So the family isn't quite as happy as they may look at the outset.
Well,
that would be boring.
And off the bat, you're Bobby and Pam, if I can use the Dallas metaphor, of Liz and Race.
Yep.
They're out of the picture, it seems.
Yeah, they're taking a back seat for a while.
Okay.
I do know where they are, and we will check in with them, and it'll be pretty cool when we finally see them, what they're up to. But for the time being, they're just, you know, I just wanted to mix it up, and I just had more story ideas for the other characters. So I decided, you know, it wasn't a decision I made lightly, because for the longest time, Liz was kind of the focus of the book.
Absolutely.
I mean, the whole premise hinged on her, so I really hemmed and hawed about, like, gosh, can I write her out? If I do, is it just another superhero book? And but you know, the people I consulted with, my inner circle, all agreed that, you know, hey, if the stories are going in the other direction, just go with it. So
yeah, well, and I think it's okay, and I think at this point in the series as well, everyone else is established, because you're right. I mean, she was the window to this world initially.
Right.
And she represented the reader, being the newcomer into the family,
yep.
and really having to kind of go behind the scenes of what we, you know, what on the surface may have looked like almost, for lack of a better word, a Fantastic Four kind of, you know, public
sure.
family of heroes,
yep.
and then you know, we find out the dirty secrets behind them. Well, the soap opera element is playing great because, you know, I mean, right off the bat, Doc has a new wife, and the new wife
yep.
comes with a couple new kids.
Yep.
We've got Minutia and is it Seizure or
Surge?
Surge, excuse me,
yep.
Seizure.
Yep.
Surge,
that's
excellent.
A good name though.
So, and Olympia is the new
yep.
wife, and Muscle-Bound Hottie. I mean, not
yep.
really Muscle-Bound either, but just kind of like a Wonder Woman.
She's just big, yeah. She's
yeah.
like, you know, 7 feet tall and just
yeah, like
just,
a big Barna you know, almost, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she has a big hammer that she uses. So there's kind of a, you know, I wanted her to be as different from Gaia as I could, just because Gaia was a very feminine, you know, magic, and
mm-hmm.
her powers weren't physical at all. And, you know, Olympia is the opposite. She's just all brute force and not as scheming as Gaia or anything. Doc has kind of taken over the family in terms of being the driving force. And the family is different now. You know, they're less concerned with doing the PR and more concerned with actually getting out there and you know, saving the world more often.
Yeah, and you see a little more maturation from Zephyr, because it is 5 years
yep.
you know later. So, and she seems to have finally settled down and has a husband now.
Yeah, yeah, she's married. She's married off to a reformed supervillain, or is he? But we'll see that develop. And yeah, you got Frost, who's finally a full fledged member of the family.
Yeah, and very accepted, it seems. Yeah, exactly. The guy, really, yep. the black sheep now finally being accepted not only by Doc but even by Rusty as well, which is
yep.
shocking given his past relationship with Rusty's ex wife as well.
Yep, yep. And Rusty is not himself at all, as you probably noticed. He's just seems to be just a robot now, and we'll be exploring that as to just what's up with him and what happened to him and why he's like that. And I have a very specific reason why Frost is in the family as well, which we'll get into.
Cool.
Just how he made that jump. And we'll be exploring Celeste's marriage to the senile old superhero, who's
yeah.
one of my favorite new characters.
The Colonel.
Yes.
Yeah,
no, Colonel
yeah.
Comet.
Colonel Comet, that's his name? Okay.
That's his full name, yeah.
Okay, because so far, yeah, only referred to as the Colonel in the stuff
yep.
you sent me.
Yeah, that was just kind of my little Anna Nicole Smith sort of storyline. She's just married to this crazy old guy who's, you know, ushers around in a wheelchair and has a nurse and everything. So.
And Colonel Comet was a hero in the Ferververse, it seems, in maybe in the Silver Age of the
yeah,
the...
Colonel Comet. We'll learn that he is a, you know, he yeah, he's an old school superhero from the Silver Age and even like, you know, 70s and so.
Okay.
He was like the premier hero when Doc and Captain Dynamo were coming up, were the young heroes. Colonel Comet was the guy to beat,
mm-hmm.
and the main man. And I have a story worked out that shows just why Celeste is married to this guy and, you know, how they met. It'll be kind of a flashback issue that should be pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's... Again, I don't want to get too ahead of the story and everything, but
sure.
I certainly appreciated you giving me the preview and seeing, you know, kind of the beginnings of his story, because, yeah, he definitely has some secrets of his own. And
yeah, he's a major player in the first story arc. The first story arc,
cool.
six issues. It ends up in or what is it, six or five? I guess five issues. But, you know, he's a major player, and yet we still don't know a whole lot about him, but he's a pivotal player, I'll put it that way, in this story arc.
And Surge seems to have taken Zephyr's place in terms of being the impetuous kid.
Yeah, I mean, Surge, he's impetuous, but he's also just kind of the angry young man.
Okay.
He's the one who's constantly testing Doc's authority and just basically bitching about everything, and, you know, everything's always an argument with him.
So a little Frost in him then, too, actually.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit of Frost, and Frost knows that, too, and, you know, kind of gets a kick out of it. And as you saw, Surge is now dating this normal girl who
mm-hmm.
gets to kind of see what's going on in the Noble family. You know, there's a lot of parallels with Liz there, but also, you know, a bit of a different angle on the story, too, which you saw, but others won't see it till the next issue. But,
gotcha. No, I understand, and it's
yep.
No, it provides for some new twists and new entertainment. And,
yeah,
you know, you got, dude, you're, I'm telling you, I don't understand why the soap opera people aren't calling you, because you got the beats down, man. And it cracks me up. It always does. It's,
it's fun.
It is fun. That's what I really do love about Noble Causes, is the whole soap opera thing. Because, you know, it's fair, I think, to say that the big two, you know, do superheroes. And if you're going to come out with a superhero book, you have to have a different angle. And
yeah,
that's the great thing.
It's got to be something that they can't get somewhere else.
Absolutely, yep. Man. And I think you get that. And every one of your books always shows that. And I think, you know, that speaks well for Gemini as well. And as we now get into Dynamo 5, I mean, it's, you know, but Noble Causes, before we leave it, I really like I like the new characters, and I like the new directions. I think it's really interesting. And Doc has always been a favorite of mine, because I've always been a you know, he's got that kind of Reed Richards meets, you know, Doc Sampson and Doc
Savage.
Doc Savage, thank you. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm thinking of
he's just kind of a two-fisted scientist type, and I'm having fun with him. Just he's, you know, more of a just taking more of an active role in things now, and you know, there, front and center and stuff. And I got to give a shout-out to Yildiz Ray-Sinar, the artist.
Mm-hmm. He's
just amazing. I mean, that guy is just banging out the pages, and they're so fun. He can just draw anything I ask of him. And, you know, the books just never look better.
No, it does. It really, I mean, that's the thing. The women are sexy, and you need that in a soap opera, and the action is good. And I think it's a good balance of soap opera and superheroes. So, I like I said, I've always enjoyed Noble Causes. I appreciated the concept from day one, and I think this 5-year jump is an interesting move on your part. And look forward to seeing where everybody is who we're used to seeing not being there, and finding out where they are. But also, I appreciate the new characters. So I think it's a good start, man. Nice going.
Thanks.
And I should go back to Gemini and ask you about your artist there. Tell me about
the artist. Yeah, that's a guy named John. And I'm probably butchering his name, Samariva, I believe you pronounce it. He's an Australian guy. And I could be wrong, but I think his first published work was in an issue of Noble Causes years ago.
Oh, wow.
He did a backup story when we were still doing those.
Sure.
And then he went on to do some stuff at Dark Horse. I know he did, like, a Star Wars story here and there. And he did a book called Go Boy 7 that Tom Pyre wrote as part of their Rocket Comics imprint a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just kind of faded away for a little while, and then just one day out of the blue, I don't know, 6 months ago, however long it was, just sent me an email and was like, hey, I want to do a book with you. It included a bunch of his recent art. And I sent it to Image and was like, what do you guys think? And they're like, yeah, he needs to be doing a book right now. And I was like, well, you know, I didn't even want to do anything. I mean, I had Noble Causes and Dynamo 5, and that was pretty much all I needed. And so I was like, well, you know, I don't know what to do. And I just mentioned, literally just like, well, I have this idea about the Manchurian Candidate, but he's a superhero. And Eric Stevenson was like, yeah, let's do that. And, I mean, that's away we went.
Very cool.
And John's fantastic.
He's got kind of a Humberto Ramos kind of style.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, he really, I think I'll be picking up a lot of new readers who don't read my other books just because of his artwork. I mean, that's, you know, he's popular on DeviantArt and some of these websites where, you know, the kids who really like that, the kind of manga, video game, you know, Capcom-style artwork just go crazy for his stuff. So I think I'll be seeing some different faces who read my books. It'll be interesting.
That's cool, man. You, Fraction, and I think Claymore, I think you guys always find interesting artists for your projects.
Hmm.
And you know,
I try. It's not easy. There's a lot of good guys out there, but there's also a lot of flakes.
Sure.
And guys who look good and you know, take too long or you know, can't commit, or you know, they're just snatched up at Marvel and DC. So
absolutely,
to find three artists who are with me at Image and want to be here is you know, I couldn't be happier.
Very cool. Well, let's move on to Dynamo 5, and the new issue came out this week.
We're
recording this on New Comic Book Day.
Correct.
And, you know, so catch me up on Dynamo 5. What's going on right now?
Yeah, Dynamo 5, and it probably needs a catch-up because it's been a while since an issue's been out. We're running a little late on that, too. But we're in the middle of our second arc. The second arc runs from issues 8 through 13, and is basically kind of the gathering of their first team of villains.
Okay.
It's going to be a group of villains that they've kind of fought individually over the course of the run, and now they're teaming up, and issue 11 brings that to a head. Issue 12, it really, you know, comes together, and issue 11 really deals with another plot line where Slingshot, her father's been kidnapped, but by people who know about her powers, and they want to blackmail her into doing something for them that she, you know, obviously doesn't want to do. But she has to in order to free her dad. So the Dynamo Kids obviously agree to help her, but their den mother, Maddie Warner, says no. She says, you guys are, you know, you guys exist to protect Tower City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this thing with Slingshot's dad, as tragic as it is, isn't in Tower City, so I can't have you running off somewhere else, leaving the city defenseless. And she's like, I know it sucks, but that's the way it is. So it's basically like, you know, them finally disagreeing with Maddie and just going off on their own and doing this anyway. And we see what the repercussions are of that happening. So it's so that a lot of that happens in 11. So it's pretty cool. And then we've got 12, and then the annual, which is kind of an all-flashback annual, lots of not behind the scenes, but untold tales of Dynamo 5 and Captain Dynamo and stuff.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm curious to see more of Captain Dynamo, obviously, and
yeah,
as much as, you know, the focus is on the new kids and everything. And that's why Colonel Comet intrigues me in terms of, are you going to, you know, step back, and are we going to see more Silver Age stories of,
we're going to see a little bit. Yildiray has this other style, you know, kind of a simpler, quicker style that's kind of a Silver Age style, and
okay,
he wants to do a Colonel Comet backup story. and I think he said he can bang these, like, two pages out in a night the way he draws in this other style. So, you know, I think we're going to do that. He already mocked up a kind of an interior cover for it, complete with the old trade dress and stuff, and it's really neat. So I think we're going to do it. It's just a matter of what issue is going to be slotted into. We'll see that the Celeste issue has the issue that reveals how she and Colonel Comet got together jumps around in time. So we'll see some more flashback stuff there. And in Dynamo 5, there's going to be an issue coming up that kind of gives the life story of Maddie Warner, so we'll see, you know, Maddie and Captain Dynamo as young, you know, heroes in their 20s and stuff, along with Doc Noble and maybe Colonel Comet as well. I haven't written the issue yet, but I kind of know what happened. So, yeah, we'll be exploring their backstories.
When you shift to these different time periods, do you try for a punchier style? Is there a writer's style in mind when you...
No, because I want to keep the characters and just the tone consistent, so mm-hmm. I'm going to resist the urge to go and do any sort of, Stan Lee style or anything like that.
Yeah, or Mort Weisinger, you know, the Mort Weisinger Superman thing.
No, it'll be consistent. I mean, the one exception, I may play around with that a little bit in the Colonel Comet backup story, since it's going to be drawn in that style and it's going to be full on. But any kind of interior flashbacks that happen in the main story will be consistent in tone and style, I think.
I've enjoyed too the villains. We've focused on the heroes, but the villains that you come up with as well. And
it's tough. It's hard to come up with good names and concepts and introduce them and make them interesting all in an issue. You know, I've steered away a little bit from the whole done in one format of Dynamo 5, but I'm still trying to make the issues as self-contained as I can. Just to switch things up, because Noble Causes is anything but. It's so serialized. And they're both superhero families, and I'm trying to make as many differences as I can between the two.
Now, between the three projects, I would guess that the plate's kind of full at that point. I don't know if you are able to entertain any other genres that you might.
It's full, but I'm actually talking to an artist right now about doing something, some sort of crime book.
Attaboy.
I don't know what form it'll take yet, but I like his stuff, and I. It's just a matter of, he already said, he's like, look, you know, I can't do a monthly book, but, so we're talking about, you know, do we want to do something bi-monthly or something that's, a graphic novel or you know, I don't know what. There's a number of different ideas I have for how it could be formatted, but Yeah, so I mean, we've literally just started talking about this in the last couple of days. So
would it be?
I don't even have a premise yet. I just know I want to do something that's just straight crime.
Okay, because I was wondering if it would be a new character, or would this be an excuse to bring Dodge's Bullets back? Or
No, I think it'll probably be something new rather than trying to revive Dodge. I mean, I know that this guy I'm talking to is also a Pacific Northwest resident, so it'll be set up here.
Okay.
So it's possible Dodge could be have a cameo or even a kind of a co-starring or role, but it's not going to be a full-fledged Dodge's Bullets revival.
Okay, no problem. What's your con schedule like this year, Jay?
So far, Emerald City Con in May here in Seattle, and I'm also doing New York in April.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'll see you in New York then.
Yes, and it will be a big Dynamo 5 Noble Causes show because Yıldıray and Mahmood will both be coming from Turkey, as I understand it.
Oh, that's terrific.
For their first American show as professionals. So.
Wow, that's great.
So, yeah, that should be very cool. I've never met either one of these guys before. So we'll get to hang out and sign books and all that stuff.
Yeah, got to hit those guys up for sketches, man. Because
absolutely.
Gorgeous work, man. And it's that would be fun to see. And especially, like I said, I think definitely Colonel Comet. I'm a big fan. I think that's an intriguing new character. And I look forward to his story kind of developing in Noble Causes.
So you're doing New York then, I take it?
Yeah.
There. Cool.
Yeah, and, you know, Newsarama is going to have a big presence at the New York Con, and it gives me a moment to plug if people haven't read the press releases and stuff. They're the media partner for the convention.
I think I did read that. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, the stat guys are going to be upstairs doing interviews, and I'm going to be on the floor, and I'll be doing audio and video interviews as well. So
great.
We'll bring the camera by definitely and spend 5 minutes with
you. Yeah, I'm going to kind of limit my time at the show just because I don't get to New York very often, so I want to get out and about too. But
that's cool.
But we'll definitely make arrangements.
Fantastic. So have you seen any movies lately or any TV? I'm sure you're a busy man.
What am I into these days? The last movie I saw was Vantage Point, which I was kind of disappointed in.
Okay, now that's interesting because I've heard good and bad, and you're another one of the bad.
Yeah, it was okay, but it wasn't great, and the ending was, you know, just kind of hinged on a lot of coincidences, and it seemed to kind of just fall together at the end.
It reminded me, in terms of premise, of a De Palma film a few years ago that Gary Sinise and Nick Cage did.
Was that Snake Eyes?
Yes.
Yeah.
In terms of, not everything is what it looks like. And you know,
Right. Although, this was a bit different. Did you see Vantage Point?
Not yet, no.
It was just different because they really played up kind of the different angles on everything where you would literally see the same scene 4 or 5 times.
From different
perspectives. From a different perspective. And you learn new things about it.
That's cool.
So that angle was neat. But after a while, it just kind of fell apart, I thought.
Now, I know you're a TV detective guy, and I got to ask about some shows that have come out in the last couple of years since we've talked.
Hit me.
How about Burn Notice? Have you seen that?
I do, yeah. I like Burn Notice.
That was awesome.
What's that?
I thought it was awesome. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, the one thing that keeps me from raving about it, I think, is just I don't know if it's a budgetary thing, but it never has any good action to me. Any kind of fight scene or shootout always seems very cheap. It seems to be just kind of, I don't know, it's not very convincing or they're over too quickly or I don't know. I don't know why that bothers me. That's such a silly hang-up, but I do like it. I do like it a lot.
I thought the violence at some points got pretty big for Cable, and like, I just remember his little neighbor that he had his problem with.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Yep.
So that was an exception, but I kind of know what you mean. And, that's kind of what was wrong with Blade, I think. That I thought the fight scenes
were
convincing.
I never got into that one.
You know, it wasn't good until the second half, and I think by the time it found its footing, it was over. And
One of those, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's too bad. And maybe if it had made it to a second season, they kind of found a direction for it. But
right.
I can understand, you know, that it was too little too late. Unlike Burn Notice, where I think the concept was strong from day one, and also that actor, and I know I've seen him before, and I can never place him.
Yeah, he's been around. He was on a show. They did an American remake of Touching Evil.
Oh yeah,
and he was in that. He was a lead in that.
Oh okay, wow.
And that was on, I think, USA a couple years ago.
Yes, I never saw the American one, but I've I've caught a few episodes of the British one, and I love the guy from that, who also is in one of my favorite British TV shows, Wire in the Blood.
Oh, okay, yeah, I haven't seen either of those, but I've heard good things about it. I saw the American Touching Evil, but not either of the British versions of those shows.
Have you seen any other British shows lately?
I saw the second season of Life on Mars, the second and last.
Cool.
I saw that a while ago. I just bought the DVDs. I've got an all-region player.
Oh, there you go.
And it was cool. I liked that show.
I've been watching the spinoff of that, Ashes to Ashes.
Yeah, I've heard of that, and it doesn't do it for me. I I haven't seen it, so I can't judge, but I just the premise alone, I kind of wish they'd just let the whole thing rest rather than go back to the well again.
No, I understand. Well, I think, unfortunately, the character, Gene Hunt, is too popular. You can't let him lie there. It's sillier than the two seasons of Life on Mars, but I still like it. And I also like the woman who, Keeley Hawks, I want to say is her name, and she was in MI5 in Spooks.
Oh, okay.
And she was in the original threesome of
Field
Agents.
Right.
She was Zoe.
Okay, gotcha.
So yeah, she's the detective in the Ashes to Ashes, the spinoff for Life on Mars.
Yeah, I might check it out when it comes on BBC American, but I'm not excited enough to hunt down the DVDs when they come out or the torrents.
Are you Doctor Who or Torchwood fan?
No, I can't get into those either for some reason.
No.
Yeah, it just doesn't push my buttons. My other big British show is Murphy's Law. Have you seen that?
Yeah, absolutely, man. That guy.
Holy crap, that is so good.
Yeah, and James Nesbitt, that Irish actor. My God.
Yeah.
That guy's just a hell of a leading man. Did you
see
his?
Yeah, I mean, Jekyll was the other thing
there you go.
Just blew the doors off it. It was both of those shows are just amazing. I bought the whole Murphy's Law 5-season box set thing and just plowed through them. It was really good stuff.
Now, did that include that last 3-part story?
Yeah, where with like the human trafficking and stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It included everything. Yeah,
I mean, it's a neat show because I think it started off with a much lighter tone.
Oh yeah, it's really evolved.
And and it's become this very very dark show and everything. And yeah, especially that story. My God, I was like, wow, because I think I've only caught the stuff I've seen on BBC America up until that 5th season 3-part story.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I was like, so yeah, I don't think I've seen really the devolution of Murphy and how it's gotten to be a much darker show.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it really did. And I think that's a lot due to James Nesbitt. Stuff I read, he said, you know, he got sick of
playing silly.
Because for the first 2 years, every episode was a different case entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know, I'm just getting sick of him going undercover as a janitor or as a priest or all these stupid disguises. And he just wanted to do kind of the wise guy style where it's just one case for the whole arc. And he just kept pushing him to do darker and darker. And, you know, he's a story consultant and all that stuff. And it works.
That's cool. I'm going to have to track that stuff down. Have you seen Rebus?
I haven't seen that either.
Rebus is Ken Stott. And Ken Stott is a Scottish actor who also had another show, and that's coming out on DVD called The Vice.
Okay, I've heard of that, but I haven't seen that either.
That's coming out this month, but Rebus is a Scottish procedural, and and it's a pretty solid cop show. And I don't know, for me, maybe half the appeal is seeing the foreign country,
sure,
you know, attitude towards police procedurals versus you know what we get in America and stuff. And did you see a great Belgian film? It was about a Memory of a Killer, I want to say.
No, have not.
It was about a hitman who has Alzheimer's disease, and it was
this. Oh, I've heard of that premise before.
Very interesting, and it's just again, it's interesting to see this, you know, kind of standard American style procedural, but again, done under the trappings of this is how the Belgian police handle something.
Huh.
So that's to me, it's always exotic enough and interesting enough that I'm always curious to see how they, you know, go through the beats of a typical Dragnet or Law and Order or whatever. You know.
Yeah, definitely. One of my other big shows recently was on, have you heard of the Canadian show Intelligence?
Yes, and I know that's coming out on DVD very soon.
Yeah, but next month or two, I think. Yeah, it's fantastic.
That's cool.
It's very good stuff. And it's interesting to see, you know, America is kind of portrayed as the heavy. And that it's got a very interesting worldview. So it's cool to see it as an American where we're not the good guys, really.
Now, does that share characters with Da Vinci's Inquest?
No, just creators. It shares a lot of actors, but it's a completely separate universe.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, and I, it's funny, in Chicago, they play Da Vinci at like, you know,
oh, yeah, yeah.
1 in the morning on Saturday nights.
Yep.
So, and you know, it's funny, I know it's on the national feed for WGN.
Right.
But we don't get it local. We get it on a different station locally.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So I have to kind of hunt for it on a Saturday after coming home and stuff.
That's one of my favorite shows ever, I think. And Intelligence is, you know, same writer, same directors, same, a lot of the same actors, but totally different roles. It's just, you know, same city. So you could easily mistake it for Da Vinci, but
okay.
Not.
And was it more than one season or just the one season?
There were two.
Okay.
And they're currently, it doesn't look good for a third, but they're...
That's what I've heard.
What's that?
Well, that's what I've heard. It's, you know, I was talking about with Ed Brubaker, actually.
Yep.
And he said that because the creator has either had a position in Parliament or whatever, but I know that, like, there are people in government who are really against this show and the tone of the show.
Yeah, there was the guy who inspired Da Vinci, the real-life corner,
is a
member of Parliament. And,
okay.
So there was that, and there was just Intelligence. I don't know what the deal is, but the creator claims that CBC just doesn't want it anymore because there's been a big regime change at CBC. And but the interesting thing is that Chris Haddock, the creator, has signed a deal with Fox to develop an American version of Intelligence. He's teaming up with John Wells for this pilot season. I don't know if it's going to get picked up, but they're working on an American version of it, which should be interesting. I don't know. It's got to be a totally different tone. It's got to be set in America. I can't see them setting it in Canada and all that stuff. But
you see, I really wish that the American networks would sometimes grow some balls and really present something the way that it was intended to, because unfortunately for every good Americanized version of, say, The Office, you know, think of the millions of misfires they tried with a comedy like Fawlty Towers or even good dramas and stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I cringe to think about what the American life on Mars is going to turn out like.
Right. I know ABC's been kicking that around. And, well, you know, it's funny, again, because I think they're probably going to go for a more 70s Starsky and Hutch kind of.
Yep.
That's my guess. And that's fine. But, you know, it's again, I think it was the discovery of the British attitude of what cop procedurals were like in the 70s, which made me then, you know, go out and get the Sweeney.
Yep. It was also, I mean, what made Life on Mars so good to me was the way they were able to, I mean, not only the cultural differences, but they really juggled the humor and kind of pathos well. I mean, it was funny, but you also really felt for Sam and wanted him to get home, and he really got that angst through, and I just don't think they'll be able to definitely do that. I'll be shocked if they can.
Well, and
I think it'll be much more played for comedy.
And foreign television, I think, you don't need to be as pretty as you do on American TV.
Yep.
Because really, I mean, God, you look at, and even like the guys, some of the guys we've been talking about, like James Nesbitt is not your, I mean, he'd be lucky to be a character actor in American television, and he's a great leading man. And the same with Ken Stott. I mean, these are just, you know, just actors. I mean, they're average looking people. And the same thing goes with Da Vinci's Inquest, for example.
Yep.
So, you know, were you a Night Beat fan, or wasn't it Night Beat?
Yeah, Night Beat, the old Canadian cop show.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen a couple of them, and I've heard it's great, but I've never, I mean, when I saw them, it was like, God, 20 years ago.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't really remember it enough to say whether I was a fan. But certainly didn't, you know, so I guess I have to say I'm not.
No problem.
But I've heard good things, and I'd love to see it again.
Well, and if I haven't mentioned it in our last conversation, because I know we both talked about how much we like Stephen Cannell. Have you tracked down that Google video I told you about, or did I tell you about that Google video?
Well, this is a weird coincidence. Talk about that, like, 9-hour interview with him?
Yes.
Yeah, I just coincidentally found that myself, like, last weekend. Isn't that crazy?
It's awesome.
Yeah. I remember telling my girlfriend, I was like, yeah, I'm going to sit here all day and just watch this thing, so I'll see you later.
Well, and you know what I would do is I would end up dead rolling the audio into the very software that I use to record Word Balloon, and I would just make MP3s. Over the course of like a month, I would, you know, grab every half hour and stuff and just, you know, listen to it.
So it was just one day for me.
Oh, God.
Like, OD'd on that thing.
Oh, my God. It's fantastic for any of you fans that really enjoyed, like, all those great Stephen Cannell shows. And some of them, I forgot they were Stephen Cannell shows, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Like The Commission, things like that. I didn't realize
I knew about The Commission, but I always forget that he did Baba Black Sheep.
Yes.
That was the one that I always forget was him. And just hearing him talk about, for those of you not familiar, I mean, he talks about almost all of his shows at least a little bit, some of them at length, but also about his process. And,
yes.
You know, how he broke in and just how he breaks a story and why. And he's just fantastic. I mean, one of my favorite writers.
Well, and there are so many other writers, television writers. And this is all at the Television Academy. It's through their website, but really they post all their videos at Google Video. So if you do a Google search for the Television Academy, you'll find their blog that lists all of their interviews. And they're just these great oral histories where literally they've just turned a video camera on these guys.
Yeah.
And there's an off-camera interviewer who is just going through their career. And not only dramatic writers, but also comedy writers and comedy performers and dramatic performers and directors and technicians. I mean, that's the thing. It's this really amazing history. And it's all free. And I would say for people who enjoy learning about the writing process and even acting as well, any of those kind of interests, you're going to learn a lot. And I think it's a very valuable resource that's there for free to really help people, you know, become better writers and better performers and technicians.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's tons of trivia, but also just as a, you know, as a learning device. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I did a quick look to see if there's anybody else who caught my eye on there who was being interviewed. I didn't see anything that interested me that much. I mean, there were other people interviewed, but they seemed to be much shorter, just, you know, half an hour or whatever. But
well, from a comedy standpoint, interesting people. I mean, Steve Allen is on there. Sid Caesar is on there for 3 hours. Carl Reiner.
I didn't see any of that.
Yeah, Carl. And then again, you know, you can even get people like Ron Howard is on there as well. I mean, it's not old time. It's not just old timers. There's a lot of contemporary people as well.
Yeah.
And I'd say every month they put new interviews up.
Really?
So, it's a pretty interesting resource. And
Roy
Huggins, I know, Stephen Cannell's mentor.
He's awesome. He was on there?
Yeah, he's on there. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. And
he created, for people who don't know, he created Maverick, and he was with Cannell on the Rockford Files initially.
Yep, Rockford, and I'm trying to think. Did he do? No, he didn't do The Fugitive. Did he?
Oh, he did. Yes, he did.
He did. Okay. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, The Fugitive and Run for Your
Classic,
Life, which was another kind of show
television.
Like that. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, especially like you know, and I know Jay and I like this, and a lot of the Word Balloon guys who. Love some of the cheesier old detective shows and stuff. I noticed Mannix is finally coming out on DVD.
I saw that, yep. Yep.
So.
Yep, and you know what came out last week? This is a real obscure one. B.L. Stryker. Remember that one?
Yes, I do. Why? That was part of an ABC wheel. Who was on that?
Yeah. Burt Reynolds.
Oh, that's right. That was Burt Reynolds' show. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's no Dan August, sir.
Yeah, no. But it had an interesting pedigree, though. It had... Tom Selleck was a producer, so it had a real kind of Magnum sensibility to it. Robert B. Parker wrote an episode.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's cool.
Yeah,
Spencer Ryan, that's really cool.
It really just basically ripped off his early Autumn novel. I mean, it was, you know, Stryker takes in a young kid and kind of teaches him how to box and all this stuff.
Oh, that's hilarious. Hey, what do you think of the Tom Selleck, Jesse Stone films?
I think they're great.
Me too, man.
You know, they're totally, you know, he's... about twice the age that Jesse is in the books, but aside from that, I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, I really like him, too, for TV movies, and they're on DVD. And yeah, you know, for people who are just looking for that kind of entertainment and stuff, it's nice to see that there's room on the schedule for these movies, and I'm glad
there's another one coming out soon, I think.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
And I know there's a new Parker novel that's already on the racks.
Yes, another Jesse Stone, yep.
So there you go.
Yes.
Well, Jay, there, as always, it's fun talking about TV and movies, but also fun talking about the Fairview Universe.
And comic books. Yes.
There you go. No, we did good.
No, we did.
I think we covered the beats. And honestly, congratulations on the 5-year jump on Noble Causes. I hope I hope the readers follow it. It's a very good start, and continued success with Dynamo 5. And Gemini has a very interesting start as well. And looking forward to seeing that. Come out in May. I think the Fairbairn verse is doing very well in good hands, and you being the clockmaker, I think all the gears are running in place. So nice going, man.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
Always nice to check in with Jay Farber. Make sure you check out his books. That's Dynamo 5 from Image Comics. Also, Noble Causes with that 5-year jump. I'm telling you, the story's very interesting. And the new book that looked very intriguing as well, the 5-issue miniseries, Gemini. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Sundress. Don't forget, you can find Word Balloon all over the internet. Of course, we're at iTunes, at newsarama.com, but you can find us at our MySpace page, myspace.com/wordballoon, also our comicspace.com/wordballoon page, and at all the various podcatcher sites, whether it's Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, Odeo, you name it, we're there. If you have any questions or comments about the show, feel free to email me, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.